Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Race, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 6, Episode 1, A Time to Stand. Teleplay by Iris Stephen Baer and Hans Beimler, and directed by Alan Croker. A Time to Stand aired on September 29th, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, with the Dominion on track to win the war, Sisko and his crew take a captured Jem'Hadar ship into enemy territory, with a mission to cut off their Ketchocel white supply in the Alpha Quadrant.
I'm really glad that I reworked that, because I had posted it from Memory Alpha, and it was, like, so wordy, so I actually cut it down for you.
Yeah.
Good job, Elise.
Meanwhile... On the occupied station, the merits of how to define an occupation are discussed.
Right. So this episode's interesting because it's like part of an ongoing... It's the beginning of a six-episode arc, actually. So because of that, the A and the B plot don't actually intersect in this episode. So it's like, it's very separate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like... I guess light spoilers for that 30-year-old TV show. Originally, Rick Berman wanted the entire Dominion War solved in this six-episode arc.
That's
it's
insane.
Not,
and it won't yeah. be. And I think it's wrong that it but, like it, it. It's sorry. It's correct that it's not. Like that wouldn't. That would have yeah. felt too. We need time with this. I mean. I think it's cool that, like, 3 months has passed since the season finale. Sorry, I'm getting over being sick, so I may cough a little bit. Yeah. And I think that this is war is not a quick thing, so it would be weird to, like, show it very quick. I mean, I think it only works for a year in hell, the episode of Voyager. But that's, like... doing a different thing.
So, fun fact about the two-parter Year of Hell starring guest starring Kurtwood Smith. the original concept for that was to do that as a whole season.
Yes, I remember hearing about that.
Right? So, that would have been interesting. And then when they circled back to that concept like that was season 3 of Enterprise.
Yeah.
Which was the whole Zindi stuff. I'm just full of useless knowledge, you know. Do I remember to buy groceries some weeks? No. Do I remember obscure, like, behind-the-scenes information on Star Trek? Yes.
Understandable. I do want to talk about, like, this arc obviously is going... Not obviously, but I told our listeners already. It's going to be 6 episodes, and we're only on the first of that. Ronald D. Moore said that the episodes were broken down as a group, but that everyone went and, like, wrote their own episodes. So, in general, they knew what was going to happen in each episode, which I think is a smart way to plan something like this. I also wanted to note Robert Hewitt Wolf left the show at the end of season 5, and so Hans Beimler started collaborating with Iris Stephen Baer on episodes on seasons 6 and 7. As you may remember, Iris Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf were often writing partners. I do want to talk about how... Before we get into it, I want to say it was so nice to hear Majel's voice at the beginning of the recap and at the end of the recap being like, last time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and like now continuing. Her voice is always such a comfort to me, and it made me feel like this is Star Trek. Because we don't often get her voice on this show because it's a Cardassian station and she has not voiced the computer.
Right, she's the Starfleet computers.
Exactly. I do want to mention this. something I really love when shows do that. The teaser in this episode is almost like 7 minutes long, which is like very, very long for Star Trek. I am a huge fan of like when you're watching a TV show and like, bam, you like think you're in the episode and they hit you with like the opening credits and you didn't even realize you were still in the teaser. The show The Good Fight was really good at this. That was the sequel to The Good Wife. It'd be like 17 minutes into an episode and they'd like hit you with the opening credits sometimes. I always find that really fun when you like forget that the credits haven't rolled yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I still think one of my favorite cold opens is in the first episode of A Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Where it opens with them, the gate, they go in the wild, and you see the others for the first time, and then it
cuts. Yeah, because we don't really get a lot of cold opens on that show, if I recall. Like, it often started with the opening credits, right?
More often than not. Yeah. I think there were a couple. I can't think of them all off the top of
my head. Occasional. I agree. That was a really fun one because you're like, ooh, what's getting set up here, you know?
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the Game of Thrones theme song and Ellie, my dog that passed away last summer?
I believe you have, but please tell us again because I don't remember because my brain's...
Yeah, so Ellie liked to bark at, especially, horses and, other dogs, on TV. And she'd be... This is when I lived in the townhouse. She'd be, on the upstairs floor and the TV was in the basement. I'd be watching Game of Thrones or, House of the Dragon.
Because
it uses the same theme song. And she would come from, two floors away when she heard the Game of Thrones theme song. And just would start barking at the TV because it's, she knew that there was going to be, dire wolves or dragons horses that she can bark at. So she would just start barking at the theme song even if there was no animal on the screen.
Do you think she was making up her own song lyrics for the theme song?
Maybe.
I remember
Pavlov had a bell and Ellie had the Game of Thrones theme song.
Had what's his face? Roman I never pronounce his name. The composer.
Ramin Djawadi.
Yes. I remember when that show was on, there was a YouTube that put lyrics to the song, but it was literally just them saying fucking Game of Thrones over and over again to the point where I would sing that with the theme song. So me and Ellie are very similar.
There you go.
Iris Stephen Bear had some comments on doing the war story that I wanted to read a quote from. We knew that going into the war would make it easy for us to fall into the hero trap, where you concentrate on Star Wars-type heroic space battles and stuff like that. But we wanted to keep the human aspect of the pain of war, so we included a human moment, the concerned father talking to his son. I think that was really important. I also think that some of Julian's scenes also fall into that, because you see, how the war is affecting him a lot in this episode, even if it's not, he doesn't smile until towards the end of the episode. Julian's going through it because as the doctor, you're seeing everyone's pain. And I think that they showed that really well. I think both Avery Brooks and Alexander Siddick are doing amazing acting in this episode. There are two.
Yeah, there's just a different tenor to Sid's performance.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I do want to say,
because it's
sorry, I was gonna change the subject,
go ahead.
But I didn't want to cut you off.
No, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead.
I do think it's funny that Jake thinks that the Dominion would have freedom of press. Okay, Jake, good luck with that. And I want to say my least favorite bit of this episode is the Dukat and Kira stuff. I fucking hate it so much. His attraction to her is so creepy, and it honestly reminds me of Thomas Jefferson.
It could remind you or remind the viewer of a lot of people and a lot of different things. It's really gross sexual harassment vibes. Yeah. And it's the whole idea of, again, this Bajor has the non-aggression treaty with the Dominion. Mm-hmm. In theory, it's not an occupation, but it feels like mm-hmm. it. But it's not like the titular occupation yep. from before. But just, you know, how the paternalness that Dukat has towards the Bajorans, it's like
well, yeah.
even extra icky because yeah. it's like he wants to do some weird like...
He wants to build...
Slave
he wants,
role play?
Exactly.
Like,
and yeah. I mean, I think of Zial as well. Like, he had a kid with someone who was under his occupation. And in Kira's mind, and I think in my mind, he would have a whole family of, like, slave children that were half Bajoran if it was up to him. You know that man has, like, 1,000 children.
Yeah.
And it's just really gross. Real power imbalances there.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God, I hate that I'm going to say this.
I cannot but wait to hear what this is.
Just with the amount of children that Dukat has and how gross and sexual harassy he is, he's Elon Musk.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Ugh.
He's smarter than Elon Musk.
Yeah, no, true.
I just need to throw that out there. Yeah. It's gross. It's funny, I'm podcasting on Lawsy's podcast Asimovcast tomorrow, and this one short story that I read, not to burn pod for that, but it's called Alexander the God, and it's like about this guy who builds this computer that just like collects wealth from him, and I unfortunately have to go into Elon Musk on that podcast as well tomorrow.
Well, the good news is, Elise, is that you won't be burning pod for that, because I'm sure that podcast will come, even though you're recording it tomorrow, will come out long before this one gets posted.
I'll
try to be better about that, folks. It's been a busy month.
I've had like 2 illnesses this month. We have been so busy. I wasn't going to make that joke, but I was thinking it, so I appreciate you vocalizing that.
There you go.
And not me.
I'm nothing if not accountable.
And I love you, and it's fine. We're on season 6. Like, I can't believe we've done 5 whole seasons of the show. I know we come out a little sporadically, but like we get it out in the end, and I think that's what's important. And we have 2 seasons left, and we're gonna do all of them. I have faith. It's too far to turn back now.
Exactly. I've already like slowly, because they're on sale, because I got rid of my DVDs when I moved, so I bought the Blu-rays of the Ron Moore Battlestar Galactica.
Nice.
And so I've started like, because I rewatched it in years, and part of me is like, should I pretend it's like 2005 and like do like blog after, like, is this rewatch?
Oh, like a recap, like, blog.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll just do it season by season if I do it at all.
Right. I never
don't want to overcommit myself.
That show. This is going to like explain Elise a little bit more to our listeners. And I'm assuming most of our listeners are our friends, so they already know this about me. You know, in season 4, when that one couple, the engineer guy and the other woman have like the baby, and like there's like so many episodes where that baby's just crying because like everyone's miserable. I forget the guy's name. Anyway, there's like a couple has a child and the child won't stop crying, and I was like, I cannot listen to this for a second longer, and like have not finished. Like, I literally watched through like season 4 episode 2 or 3 and was like, fuck this, I cannot listen to another baby. I can't listen to this baby crying for the whole season. It might have ended, but I did not give it a chance to find out. I was like, I can't listen to this anymore. Like, it was giving me a headache.
Well, I mean, it's sometimes you're in the mood for it and like sometimes you're not.
Yep. Anyway,
back to Deep Space Nine.
I split this episode into what's happening on the station and then what's happening with Starfleet. So let's talk about the station first.
Let's do it.
Okay. So it's really, I think the basis of this whole plot is that Weyoun and Dukat are not on the same page. And Dukat mm-hmm. does not want to admit that he kind of sort of reports to Wei Yun. Dukat's pleased. He thinks that the Dominion's doing really well in this war. He thinks that they're pretty close to conquering Earth. Wei Yun is excited that the Bajorans are going to come back to the station, but also thinks it's kind of bizarre that Dukat did not tell him. Dukat's like, yeah, I know. And Wei Yun's kind of like, okay, that's weird. But he also is not going to lose face in front of Kira with Dukat, because he wants her to think that they're like a unit.
Yeah.
Kira is asking that the Bajoran security force be reinstated. And Dukat is like, no, we were handling this. And Kira reminds them, you said we were going to have the same deal we had with the Federation. And with the Federation, this is how it was. So Wei Yun's just, the whole time, Wei Yun's just trying to like tamper down like everyone's minds and just be like, we're all friends here. Like, everything's great.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. And it really comes out that Wei Yun's whole reasoning, I think, for... Well, besides the fact that strategically, like, they want Bajor to, like, be eventually part of them, the Dominion, even though, Bajor does not want that to happen, Wei Yun does not want to piss off Odo, who he looks at as a god. And I think that it really comes down to that. He doesn't want to piss him off.
Wei Yun, as played by Jeffrey Combs, is just, I love him.
Me too.
So much.
I love him too.
He's like this whole like ideal of a political staffer in a lot of ways, where it's like, and even like we talked about at the end of season 5 when he has that, you know, that honey silked tongue with in that barrage with Sisko right before the war starts, when they both know there's going to be war, and it's just about lulling people into a false sense of security. It's like he pretends he's a nice guy,
yes,
and like that's his whole like political sphere, but it's like he knows he has Dukat on the leash, and Dukat resents that, and Dukat is smart, but I don't think he's as smart in his relationship with Wei Yun as he wants to be, yes. Where he thinks he can have Wei Yun on the leash, and really I think it's the other way around.
Yeah, I agree, right? With you. I think that Wei Yun has more power than Dukat, and Dukat is resentful, but also Dukat thinks he can control Wei Yun in a way that I don't think he actually can.
Yeah.
I do also like that we get the vibe. We kind of get a vibe check on the station. You know, and that always happens at Quark's. Mm-hmm. Quark is trying to make sales at the bar with the Jem'Hadar. It's hard. The Jem'Hadar don't eat anything. So, like, what are you going to sell them?
They don't want a bone in the holosuites.
No.
So you can't sell them hella sweet times. They don't gamble.
Yeah.
So they're just loitering.
Yeah. I do think that there's a really interesting conversation. Like, Kira is very worried that Dukat wants to open the labor camps again. Like, she's, like, conferencing with Odo and telling Odo about the meeting that she had with Wei Yun. And they're kind of saying, like, you know, I don't trust Wei Yun, but I maybe trust him more than Dukat, which is, like, really interesting. They think that Wei Yun is the only thing stopping Dukat from, like, going further with this, and I think that that is very apt and exactly what's happening. Because if Wei Yun wasn't there, Dukat would be probably having labor camps again and doing all the shitty things he did under the occupation the first time. And I think that it's interesting that Quark reminds her that it's much less bad than what they had last time. And hopefully it stays that way. I do think that Kira's fears are I do think that Kira's fears are real and make a lot of sense to me. But Quark reminds them, you know, the promenade's making money. There's no slaves. So in that sense, it's less bad than it was. And I found that to be really interesting, but I also feel like really, I was surprised in a funny way that Quark was like, I miss the Federation too.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole conversation and like what you're talking about now, like that is, it's better than before. This rewatch, and like it's probably a lot to do with, you know, the last 6 months,
yeah, kind of
geopolitically,
yeah,
and everything else, and rest assured, listeners, until we have to, there won't be any tariffs on our cross-border podcast. I think that still is part of free trade, but like it felt a little bit like Kira was rightfully so being alarmist about what was down the road.
Yes.
But then being like tutted for it.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, I like, yeah, it's just,
yeah, it felt,
and like I both understand Quark's perspective too, and like sometimes as alarmist as like Kira is, and how she's probably not wrong, is that how you get people on your side to build resistance? Like, I don't know. It's,
yeah,
I was noodling it more, yeah, it than felt, I think I ever have when I've watched,
yeah,
the episode.
That's really understandable. And I think that the difference between Quark and Kira felt very resonated with a lot of the things going on right now. I completely agree with you on that. I think that Kira sees the big picture maybe a little bit more than Quark. And Quark is just trying to live maybe hour by hour. Which is like, yeah. I get it. I get that too. Like, that helps you get through things. But no, I definitely, that scene was probably more affecting in this watch than it had been in the past. There is a scene with Jake and Wei-Yun that is kind of insane to me. I think it's just there to show that Jake is still very ignorant and naive about things. He had gotten approval from Wei-Yun to interview him, but like Wei-Yun had been reading some of his writing, excuse me, and was like, no, you're biased against the Dominion, so I'm not going to let you interview me anymore. And Jake, like, actually says to him, what about freedom of the press? And I'm like, this isn't the Federation, buddy. This is the Dominion. They do not have freedom of the press.
Yeah.
I think, and we learned that Wei-Yun's been withholding Jake's reporting from the Federation and will do so until his articles are, quote, more balanced. Which,
yeah. I won't publish Dominion propaganda, and I never ask you to, Jake.
Yeah.
I just,
but it feels
a
like
a little bit more fair and balanced.
But it feels very much like what our news sources, like our newspapers and news websites are doing right now. Like, I do think they frame a lot of the things that are going on in 2025 with these, like, both sides, when it's like, no, there's a fascism happening. Like, you don't have to give them an inch. You don't have to say Trump said this. You can say Trump lied about this. Like, you have to say the truth of what is happening. You can't just, like, report that someone said XYZ without challenging if XYZ is a lie. Like, you need to, and which is what Jake is trying to do, of course. But I think he's naive in thinking that the Dominion is going to let that information get out there.
And it's Wei-Yun just loves the New York Times.
It's his exactly. God. But yeah, it's like very similar to how, you know, our government, the U.S. government, is like, you know, if you're being criticizing them, they're like, okay, well, you don't have a seat in the White House press room anymore. Like, it's like shit like that. It's
you're very anti-American.
Yeah, it's very when it's could be. And like the funny part to me is that they're not going far enough in criticizing. So this is all in our world. This is all happening like without even like going as far as to really say the truth of what's happening. So you might as well say the truth if you're getting banished from the White House press room, regardless.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And it's even not so much like on the like media, like fourth estate perspective, but it's like from, you know, the like a political resistance, whether it's, you know, the Democrats or the NDP or the Liberals, like in the like Canadian context on the other half, it's like, they're going to call you like socialists and communists regardless, and whatever anyway. Yeah. So regardless of what you do, even as you try to appeal to like soft right support. So like, why don't you actually like champion universal healthcare or like do something that is kind of like really lefty that actually benefits people's material conditions?
Yes.
Because they're going to call you socialist anyways. So be a fucking socialist. But yes. I digress.
Well, the problem is that they're not socialists, so they don't actually want to help people in that way.
No, I.
But yes, I know we both know that. I don't want to kind of go into the Ducat being a creep so much anymore, but I do want to talk about the conversation that he and Kira have in his office. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will say he's a creep because he actually, like, at one point tries to not let her leave the room, which I found very uncomfortable. But she's very snarky with him, and as soon as he says, like, normally I just like you for your honesty, and I appreciate that, she's like, you betrayed all of your people when you joined the Dominion. Like, what is wrong with you? I do think that is true. And I think that maybe Ducat knows it deep down.
Yeah, it's just, I hate to punch him so much. I know. It's so icky.
He's such an interesting character, but I really hate the writing of when he comes onto her. Like, everything else he does in this show, it can be really evil or funny, or sometimes he does something good. But when he's being sex pesty towards Kira, it makes me actually hate the character. And I normally don't hate this character. I like this character very much. Like, he sucks as a person, but he's interesting. And I don't think sex pest is interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't have to go super into it, but we've mentioned it before, but it's just like there's this whole other layer watching these scenes back, having seen what we left behind, like as the DS9 doc. And
you don't want to get started stuff on this again. That one person on the internet might get mad at you again.
I forgot about that. The one like Mark Alamo stan.
Yeah. Okay, bruh. I forgot about that.
No, I know.
He was being, like, creepy in the documentary about it, too. He, like, really wanted them to get together. And it's really funny because he clearly made Kira uncomfortable, because at one point she was, like, trying to say that she didn't want Kira and Ducat to get together, but she actually...
Oh, made Nana uncomfortable, yeah.
But Nana, sorry, yeah. Because Nana accidentally says Mark, not Ducat, when she's talking about it. And they did not cut that from the documentary. I rewatched it like a month ago.
They probably should have, because I think she kind of said that she wanted them to, but you know, truth in advertise or truth in documentaries. Right.
Lastly for this storyline, Kira is very much like reminding Odo that Wei-Yun sees him as a god, and he really needs to like step up and use that to their advantage. And I think that it's good that Odo finally hears her and understands that he can use that as an advantage. So basically, Odo shows up to chat with Wei-Yun. Ducat and Dumar are there as well. And he's like, and he doesn't ask. He says, I want the Bajoran security offices reinstated and they'll be in charge on the promenade. And William can't say no to Odo. So he immediately agrees with them, and Odo's like, okay, we'll meet in the armory in an hour and get all our weapons back. And in doing so, Wei Yun then asks Odo to be on the station's ruling council with himself and Dukat. And while obviously that Kira's worried that implies that this occupation, that makes this occupation valid. And it becomes like a who's using who. And Odo's like, that may be so, but at least I can be influential in...
Yeah, like, he wants to be Chuck Schumer.
I think it's a little bit different than that. Because I think that Odo is more trustworthy than Chuck Schumer. So Odo is actually going to use information that he learns at this council to, like, fight against them. Like, Odo is, like, actually a better person than Chuck Schumer, is what I'm trying to say.
Sorry.
No, it was funny.
No, I like, but I think you're right. But also, as I'm rewatching the episode, and when Odo's like, I've done this, I've walked this tightrope before,
well, I think, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I'm like,
the one where you send a bunch of innocent people to their deaths?
So I don't think that... The previous example where Odo was doing that, I think Odo has changed a lot in the last six, seven years, like truly. And I think that I trust him now, and I wouldn't have trusted him then.
Touche. Touche. Odo can do a little collaboration as a treat.
I mean, I think that he's gonna sabotage. I like to think there's gonna be a sabotage, and welcome all y'all. There's a sabotage involved as well.
Sabotage.
So that,
shall we cut to the crew of the Defiance?
I wrote them as our heroes before I read that quote from Iris Stephen Bear about like the heroes and not wanting to do a Star Wars. So that's funny. Yes. The war is not going well for the Federation. They established that it's been 3 months since they left the station at the end of season five. This all happens in the teaser, but I was surprised and had forgotten that Bashir's genetic enhancements, get mentioned a few times in this episode. And he actually calculated their chance at winning the war, and it's under 33%. Which is extremely grim and depressing. I also think there's a scene at the beginning of the episode where he is like with Garrick for an appointment, and you see him so down and Garrick be more hopeful. And it just feels like Garrick's usually more cynical and Bashir is more hopeful. So it feels really interesting seeing that dynamics kind of switch. Like, Bashir is clearly having a rough time, and it's really sad to see. Like, he's become extremely cynical since he was like kidnapped and was a prisoner in season five.
Yeah.
They did lighten the scene a little bit by having Garrick being like, you're not genetically engineered, you're a Vulcan. Like, that got a big laugh out of me.
Then how do you explain my boyish charms? Not so boyish anymore. So good.
I just saw your post. I'm sorry.
Oh, the blue sky one?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm posting it from the Podrace account. Martok and Worf come back from whatever mission they were doing, and everyone's kind of like, what are we doing next? Like, this isn't working anymore. Dax and Sisko want to be on the front lines. Martok's like, we'll be right there with you. I really appreciated that they occasionally put some comedy in this episode to lighten it, because this episode's been really heavy. So we get the whole bit where like Worf and Martok come aboard the Defiant, and Jadzia, like, jumps into Worf's arms, and immediately Martok's like, tell her. You think it's going to be something so serious. But apparently Worf is unhappy with the plans for their wedding, and Dax is like, whatever, fine. I just found it really funny because, like, Dax is like, we haven't seen each other in 5 weeks, and this is what you want to talk to me about. But the funnier part to me is that, you know, Worf has been chewing Martok's ear about this off all week, and like, Martok is like, I do not want to be involved with this, like, please tell her so that I don't have to be like, know about this anymore.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Yeah.
And it's totally a classic, like, I'm hyper fixating on this, like, one detail because there is so much shit going on around us that I have no control over. Like, totally. You know, and yeah.
No, I agree completely. I did really like when they ran off to, like, obviously go bone. Sisko says to them, try not to break any bones. And Martok...
And Jadzia's like, we'll try with her
like
fingers crossed.
Like a little winky, like, yeah, like... and Martok needs some doctoring as well. I do think it's funny he mentions that Klingons are bad doctors. But I'm always reminded, like, I love Martok and Bashir's relationship. They clearly have, like, a deep trust and understanding since their time in prison, when they were in prison together.
They dug coal together.
I know. I love them so much. I just, every, like, season five really, I mean, I always loved Bashir, but season five really made me love him more. Like, I think they gave him so much more depth, despite the genetically enhanced storyline.
Yeah.
Eventually, Bashir comes in to tell Martok and Sisko that they've been reassigned to Starbase 375, and that the 7th Fleet only has 14 ships left after 112 was the original number. So, like, this is really bad, bad, bad. They lost almost 100 ships. The person that has reassigned them to Starbase 375 is Admiral William Ross. He's a new admiral. We've never met him before. I forgot to write down the actor's name. But he tells Ben that he's, like, getting...
Barry... Barry Jenner.
Okay. And he's like, we see him, I think he'll be in at least another episode, but he's like the one,
he becomes like a reoccurring
character. He's the one running this war basically out of Starbase 375. So he tells Ben, like, you're getting an office on 375. Like, you're not in command of the Defiant anymore. And the crew is like really confused about what that means because, like, obviously they don't want the crew to get broken up. Like, Dax is really worried. Like, are we still going to be together? And Sisko is like, I will not let that happen. We get a little bit, this is kind of about what Ira Stevenbear was talking about earlier in that quote where he like wanted the story to still be like very human. So we get Dax telling Sisko, like, you really should call your dad. Like, you haven't talked to him since before all of this happened. And it's clear that the reason why Sisko hasn't called him yet is because he doesn't know how to tell him that Jake is still on the station. And I'm glad that didn't get drawn out. Like, the next cut, like, he's talking to his dad. And, you know, his dad's not pleased, but I do think, like, our Sisko's not pleased either. And I think the conversation goes as well as it can. And there is whenever there's a serious thing in this show, they do like throw in a little bit of a comedy just to like lighten it up. So, you know, Daddy Sisko was like, is it really as bad as the news is saying? And Sisko's like, honestly, it's probably worse. And his dad is like, well, that will cheer up an old man. And Sisko was like, you didn't raise me to be a liar. And his dad goes, I raised you to be a chef for all the good that did to me. I found that to be really funny. But yeah, it's not great. He wasn't really understanding about Jake. But Sisko said, you know, he's not a child anymore. I calculated it. Jake is probably 19 right now because he was born in 2355 and this episode takes place in 74.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So he's a young adult. I do like where this, it's like halfway through the episode before we actually get to like what the mission of this episode is going to be, which I think you can do when you're more serialized. You don't have to have the whole episode be about one bit of story. So Admiral yeah. Ross is like, you're going to take the Jem'Hadar ship that we captured last year into enemy territory, and you're going to blow up the Ketracel White factory. Which I think is a really good plan. They have like 2 weeks of practice on this ship, which is, Nog is like, it's not enough, but, you know. I do love that Nog is on board with them. The ship has no infirmary, no replicator, no chairs, and no view screen.
Not a single luxury.
No.
Like Robinson Crusoe, it's as primitive as can be.
I did love that Garak joined, because they were going to go into Cardassian space, so he thought he might help. And did you see the smile on Julian's face when Garak showed up? He was so happy to see his boyfriend. Like, that was the first smile Julian had the whole episode.
I finally watched all of season 5 of Lower Decks, so I just kept thinking of the alternate universe.
Wasn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
I love it. Andrew and Alex were so happy about that, too, which made me happy. Because obviously they came back to voice their characters. And I love that I call them by their first names, like we're buddies.
No, there you go. There you go.
I do want to say that I know they're not exactly the same, but the headsets that the Jem'Hadar have that Sisko has to wear, but really ends up on Garak because it's giving Sisko a headache, kind of made me think of that TNG episode that Ashley Judd was on where they like all became addicted to that video game. I know they don't look the same, but like in my mind I couldn't remember what those headsets looked like, so I was like, it seems plausible. I don't do really well with virtual reality. So like if I was Sisko, yeah. I would have been like headache, nausea.
Well, it's not even like VR for me. Like it's the difference between when I'm playing like some video games or whatever, right? And I'm controlling like the character and the screen and the camera, I don't really get motion sickness then. But sometimes if I'm watching other people do it, that's harder for me.
Yeah, it depends on the game for me, but I am similar.
Yeah.
I often do get
there's
motion sickness from video games, even if I am controlling.
There was one... there's an older game that I played for the first time recently, the first Alan Wake, and I had to turn down some of like the camera sensitivity because the way it was like whipping around or whatever, I like couldn't play for like longer than 10 minutes at a time.
That's awful. When I got my first iPhone, I'm fine now, but when I got my first iPhone, I had to actually do the reduce motion setting. I'm used to it now, but like I do find that as I've gotten older, I have to like put my phone down a lot more because it just like makes me dizzy. Our eyes were not meant to look at screens as much as we look at screens. There's a scary moment as they are going into Dominion space where a Starfleet vessel actually starts firing on them, which obviously the Starfleet vessel like should be firing on a Jem'Hadar ship, but they don't want to fight back because they don't want to injure, and comms are down, so they can't open a channel and be like, hey, it's Sisko and company, stop firing on us. It does end kind of quickly because they get into Dominion space and more Jem'Hadar ships come and start following. I think it was the USS Centaur. They eventually are able to like continue their mission. They get to the Ketracel White factory, which they're gonna blow up, and the whole plan is that they'll exchange like 84 empty canisters for, but one of them will have a bomb, and they'll set it for like 3 minutes, But instead of letting them leave, the facility, after the exchange, the facility raises the security net and, like, they're being asked to stand by for no reason. And then, like, the bomb goes off early. So, like, a bunch of shit happens. The bomb goes off early and they just barely get away. But there's, like, a ton of damage and they have no warp drive. So they're basically looking at, like, a smaller Voyager situation. And Julia,
yeah.
And it's really funny because in the episode, like, the second, because I watched it on Friday and I rewatched it this morning, I thought, because everyone's like, how long will it take us to, like, get back? And immediately I'm like, Julian should be able to figure this out. And everyone looks at Julian and Julian is like, 17 years, 2 months, and 3 days, give or take an hour. And I'm just like, oh, that's really bad.
Yeah, it's really weird that Star Trek's doing the same plot for two different shows.
I honestly don't remember how they get out of this. So I'm excited about that.
I'm excited to relive it through your eyes.
I actually didn't remember the full, like, this episode, really. I remembered... I mean, I obviously knew that, like, Ducat and company were in charge of the station now, but I didn't remember the specifics. So you forgot to ask me, but I didn't fully remember.
Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode? There, go. Now I've asked. Now I can say I've done it in every podcast. I'm excited to keep going. Season 6 already. We have this kind of, like, you know, this 6-episode arc. It was, like, hard not to want to keep watching.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked this episode a lot. I feel like we're really in it right now.
We are in one for sure. Is there anything else you wanted to cover on the episode before we switch gears?
Nope, I am good.
Awesome. Well, now it's time for the Altar Water Thirst Quencher. Altar Water first being mentioned in Star Trek by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, because to order poison at a bar is illogical.
I just rewatched other day. I was supposed to see that in the theater last a week ago, specifically from today. But as you know, and our listeners may not know, I was in the hospital with some gastritis and could not look at a screen or leave or drive. So I unfortunately missed that. But I did watch it at home with my dad. And I don't know if I told you this, the theater was going to pair it with a TOS episode, which they aired right beforehand. So I actually...
Oh, really?
Yes. If you were going to pair an episode with that one, which one would you pick? And
Spock's Brain.
That was not the episode. They played Amok Time.
Oh.
Which I actually paired extremely well with it, because in Amok Time you think that Kirk is dead and they're also on Vulcan. Okay. And this is like this like in Search for Spock, they're looking for Spock who is believed dead. So it was just really interesting, like what a best friend will do to like rescue their friend. And like It was an interesting comparison. And so I watched Amok Time at home before watching Star Trek 3. And it was
great. And
their
big emotional culminations.
Yes. And then...
Like, that starts the day. Is Jim. Your name is Jim. Jim! Yeah.
Yes.
I get it.
It was...
That was good curation.
Yeah, it was really good. And also... That theater, which I haven't been to yet, because I've been sick twice. The first time I was supposed to go see the original Sabrina, and I had the flu, which was literally, like, the week before. I was sick for 2 weeks. They said whenever they play a Star Trek, they try to play, like, a TOS episode beforehand. So, hopefully they do more
That's
of that.
That's rad.
Yes.
That's rad.
It is rad. So anyway, I was texting Matt some quotes when McCoy was ordering his Alta. I think we can agree this is not like a super horny episode, but I did really enjoy...
Unless you're a Republican who likes war.
Fair. I think some Democrats like war too, to be honest. I did really enjoy Jadzia like jumping into Worf's arms. I found that to be really charming and cute, and it gave me the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah, I liked grizzled dour Julian kind of like channeling his like Fellowship of the Ring Aragorn in his like, you know, Strider days. that was working for me, but you know, again, Jadzia and Julian, you could probably put them under the section every episode. Elise, what was your nominee for most Star Trek thing?
This is more of a sci-fi trope in general than a Star Trek thing, but just like taking an enemy ship to do some secret stuff. I'm thinking of You, Armageddon, and Star Trek 3 and 4, where they like get the Klingon Bird of Prey and do some shit in it. And yeah, it allowed them to be cloaked when they were in San Francisco in 1986. So it worked out.
Well, that's what you need, right? If you're going to San Francisco, you need two things: to wear flowers in your hair and have a cloaked bird of prey.
Yes. And not send the Russian for the nuclear vessels.
Right. My most Star Trek thing is kind of, you know, that idea of reusing models and designs, like for Starbases. So Starbase, was it 375? Yep. Is that where we're at? It's adapted. It's not identical one for one, but the top looks like regular one from Star Trek 2, which is the bottom of the space station in Motion Picture.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that? Reminds me. Did you enjoy the Lower Decks Starbase 80 episode? Because I very much liked that.
Yeah, it was good. And I was like, wait, Nicole Byers in Star Trek now?
Oh, I know. Word. I was so excited about her voice.
So.
But yeah.
Now that I'm caught up on season 5, I'll have to rewatch the first.
I bought the Steelbook.
So did I. That's why I watched 5. Yeah.
I haven't watched it yet.
That's why I got caught up. So.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Blue Sky Letterboxd and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my True Blood podcast, Bang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. You can find links to my James Bond podcast, Pay Attention 007, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Pay Attention 007 Pod and at moviejawn.com. That's J-A-W-N.
Yeah, and you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, M-A-T-T-Y-H-U-G-H. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at Podrace, and you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.